Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia.
Hey everybody, that was the wonderful Dar Williams singing as she does every week with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the song Solartopia's words, except for the one word Solartopia. I am Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. We have a very special unit for you today. There is a huge fight going on in Ohio because of the $60 million bribe that the Speaker of the House took to foist a billion-dollar bailout for two nuclear plants in Ohio. And this session that you're about to hear is a discussion of how to deal with wind power in Ohio, because wind in Ohio could be an enormous factor. It could, in fact, generate all of the electricity that Ohio needs. And we're joined by one of the great wind experts, Dan Juhl, J-U-H-L, from Minnesota, who has personally installed between a half and $1 billion worth of windmills. So we'll jump you right in. The discussion is in progress, and it's recorded, of course, but I wanted it to be my show this week because it is really important and very to the point. So you'll be listening in to about 25 people talking over the future of wind power in Ohio and the strategy for defeating the billion-dollar bailout. Thanks so much to Jesse and the folks in New York for engineering this. And let's take a listen. We'll see you next week as well at Solartopia.
This is our second meeting of the group to try and deal with the repeal of HB 6. And what I'm proposing to do and hoping to do is to get the groups that are fighting HB 6 to also fight the wind setback clause. And I've invited Dan on to Dan Juhl, who's in northern Minnesota, where the mosquitoes are as big as eagles, tell us about the wind business. So let me run through the basics. I have had some correspondence with various groups. Ned Ford should be joining us also. Hi, Pat Morita is on, right, Pat? You're with us? But with no video option. So here's the basic lay of the land. I'm sure most of you people know this, but I want to run through the basics. In the early 2010s, the wind industry was poised. Untrained, you're recording this. Okay. The wind industry was poised to put $4 billion worth of wind development into northern Ohio, basically the North Coast. Hi, Pat. And they had financing, they had contracts, everything was ready to go. $4 billion worth of wind. Now, Dan and I were working on wind together at the time, or a little earlier actually, and I went up to northern Ohio and I visited maybe a half a dozen farms to talk to the farmers about doing wind power on their land. And every one of them, without exception, was completely excited about putting windmills on their land for a really good reason. And I'll let Dan explain, but it has to do with money without doing any work. I mean, you know, all they had to do was sign a bunch of papers, and some guys with backhoes would come in and dig a hole, take maybe an acre of their farms, and most of them had hundreds of acres, and stick a pole in the ground with a windmill on top of it. And they're going to get tons of income. And I'll let Dan do the basics. Because, Dan, how many, you're retired now. How many millions of dollars worth of wind turbine projects would you estimate that you were involved in?
Oh, involved in?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd say probably close to a billion. I mean,
$1 billion.
We did. Juhl Energy did about 600, 700 million through just Juhl Energy alone. And so, I mean, I've been involved for 40 years.
Right. But I've been, overall, you installed between a half a billion and $1 billion worth of wind turbines.
Yeah.
So you know the business. And for those of us in Columbus, Dan developed the wind project, the windmill that's at, is it a Honda dealer up on I-670?
That's Russell's Point. That's the Honda manufacturing facility. That's where they manufacture the transmissions.
So you are the one who put the windmill in Central Ohio. And
yes.
It's actually there. And are they making money on that thing?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the point of this is, in 2014, the Ohio legislature had to be bribed by somebody, went in and stuck a clause into the Ohio code that made it impossible to develop wind power in Northern Ohio.
Okay, I'm on my phone here. Sometimes my internet goes in and out. So can you explain to the people listening in here what we're talking about when we're talking about putting wind power into the North Coast? Because for most people, it's just vague and general. So let me ask you a couple questions to get it going. Let me explain, first of all, that the North Coast of Ohio, as most everybody knows, is flat as a pancake. And there are hundreds of farms up there with hundreds of acres each that are perfectly suited to host windmills, wind turbine projects. And the average footprint of a very large wind turbine, even one unit, even one that's a 2.5 megawatts and $4 million, is still about 1 acre. Is that right, Dan?
Yeah, that's way less than that, actually. The turbine footprint and the road going into the turbine usually consumes about 1/3 of an acre.
God. 1/3 of an acre for a 2.5 megawatt, $4 million wind turbine unit. Is that right, Dan?
That's right.
So how much can a farmer make? First of all, the farmers don't have to put up the money, right? If a farmer wants to have a $4 million, 2.5 megawatt wind turbine on his or her land, he doesn't have to put up the money.
No, nothing, no.
Who puts up the money?
Well, the developer does. I mean, it's part of the project. It's the land rent is an expense to the project, and it's paid by the turbine's revenue.
So a developer like you would come in, and you'd arrange the financing, and all the farmer has to do is put up 1/3 of an acre of a land. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, generally, when we look at doing a wind farm site, we go in and we talk to the landowners and the farmers and the people that live there that own the land. Sometimes the people that own the land aren't the farmers themselves, they're absentee landowners. But we talk to all of them. We offer them a contract to be able to put the turbine on their land and access the land where we put a road in, and also the infrastructure for the electrical system, the wires and so on. And we negotiate that into a land lease agreement with them, and we pay them an option so that we can start the process of permitting and all of the regulatory logistics and all the regulatory hoops that we have to jump through to get the project to the finance point. But one of the starting point is obviously the land. And Am I still there?
Yeah.
Okay. And so the land, and usually once the project gets you know, all the go through all of the hoops of getting the power contract from the utility, the interconnection agreement from the to put power into the system, all of the permits from the state, local, federal permits. Once you get through all of the development process and the project comes online, the farmers usually get paid someplace. It depends upon the size and output of the turbine, but generally someplace between $7,500 and $10,000 a year to have that turbine sitting on
nothing.
His property for doing nothing.
So a farmer who puts up, say, does a deal with you, puts up zero money, puts up 10 times a third of an acre, can make $75,000 a year by doing nothing.
$7,500. $7,500.
No, but times 10. Per 10. If you put up, if you put up 10 windmills.
The contracts are usually 20 years. If he's got 10 turbines, yeah, you're right. If he's got 10 turbines, it's 75 grand a year. And if you just do the math, it's a 20-year contract. So it's a substantial amount of money. I've had hundreds of farmers come to us and say, man, you've saved our family farm.
Yes. So not only would the wind development in northern Ohio produce a huge amount of energy, it would also save hundreds of farms. Is that right?
That's correct.
And how much gross revenue does a 2.5, would you expect basically for a 2.5 megawatt turbine to generate in a year in northern Ohio?
Well, that's all relative to the wind resource at the site. I mean, there's a lot of variables involved, but if I remember right, because we did Russell's Point quite a while ago, I think the wind resource there was right around 6 meters per second at the 80 meter height, and that machine produced around 10 million, so it was probably right around $400,000 to $500,000 a year revenue stream.
So how many 2.5 megawatt wind turbines do you think could be installed in the north coast of Ohio? Now that let's take it 20 miles down from the lake and across the northern reaches of Ohio. We know the wind is better in the east than the west, but just off the top of your head, how many windmills do you think at 2.5 megawatts could go in?
Harvey, I don't even have a where to start with that, because the siting is an issue. I mean, people live out there. When you site a wind farm, there's setback rules that you have to abide by. When I started in the business 40 years ago, there were no rules, and so basically we helped write the rules for Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, the Dakotas, on how to set these things back. And so most of them have setback rules that say that you need to be at least 1.1 times the total, with the machine, with the rotor sticking straight up in the air, what's the height of that? And that's usually right around 500 feet. You have to be 1.1 times that from the property line. You have to be 1,000 feet from a residence, and so many feet from a road. Usually it's 1.1 from a road. And so there's different setback rules. And so, and to say how much you could put across northern Ohio, I wouldn't be able to guess. But just to give you an idea, where I was down in southwest Minnesota, where we started building the first wind farms in the Midwest down there, and in the couple counties down there across the southern part of Minnesota, I think right now there is probably right around maybe $4.5 billion worth of operating wind turbines in just a few counties down there. So, and also you have to remember there's another thing too that's relative to this, and that's the technology is changing. I mean, the turbines that we put up today are so much more efficient and bigger than the turbines we put up 10 years ago. And the amount of power that they produce is just mind-boggling. And right. You know, when the 2.5 megawatt machine has a rotor diameter of 1.3 football fields, 116 meters in diameter. And so they make a lot of power. And so siting them gets more difficult, too, in doing that. And if you have siting restrictions that are too onerous on these large wind turbines, you're not going to get any in the ground.
Hey, Harvey.
Yes.
Harvey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is Dave Hughes.
Yeah.
I just want to interrupt because I'm not sure where we're going with this. I mean,
I'm going to tell you in a minute. I'm getting right to it, okay? One more small detail. I want to point out that in Ohio, all wind development stopped in Ohio in 2014. There were $4 billion worth of wind turbines poised to be built in Ohio in 2014. There have been zero industrial-sized windmills built in northern Ohio since 2014. The setback cause basically demands about 2,000 feet from the property line. And in 2014, it was under 1,000 feet. So the setback cause that was put into the Ohio code in 2014 stopped $4 billion, basically by adding 1,000 feet to the setback clause. Now, Dan, who has developed all those machines, close to $1 billion worth of wind turbines, knows that the setback clause is unworkable. Is that right, Dan?
That's right. That's right.
You cannot develop commercial wind power with the setback clause that's in the Ohio code. Dan, I'm going to ask you the big question here. Is there any ecological or economic or health and safety reason for a 2,000 or a 1,500 foot setback clause?
No, there's no reason. I mean, the reason why we have setback rules in the first place for our sake was for ice throw. And that's a known calculated thing. And the 1,000-foot rule from the residents basically is that. But, you know, there's no real technical reason for to have a setback other than you do so want to infringe on people's property if they don't want you on to infringe on the property.
Okay. So just for your information, everybody, the ice flying is in the winter, ice can form on the blades, and then if the blades are turning around, it'll fling the ice. Has anybody in the human history that you know of, Dan, been harmed by ice fling from a windmill?
No.
All right. No. Any birds killed by ice fling? Okay.
No, that's what I know.
So here we go. Okay, I want to start one more. We'll give you one more statistic, and then we'll get into why we're doing this. The installed wind capacity in Ohio for commercial industrial scale wind is 864 megawatts. In Michigan, it's 2,357 megawatts. In New York, it's 1,987. Pennsylvania, 1,459. 2,317 in Indiana. In other words, all the surrounding states around Ohio are two or three times as much installed wind as Ohio has. For no, Indiana has a lot less wind than Ohio does. And just for other reference, Illinois has 5,660 megawatts of installed wind power. That's almost six times as much as Ohio. Iowa has more than 10,000, and Texas has more than 29,000. And many of the windmills in Texas are owned by American Electric Power, which is based in Columbus. So, thank you. There's nobody that knows more about wind than Dan Jewell. So, if last question, Dan, if the setback clause was rescinded from the Ohio Code, what would happen to wind power development in northern Ohio?
Well, it would be one less hurdle. I mean, obviously, that, like I said before, that's the first step in getting things done. And so if the setback rules are prohibiting the development, you're never going to get anything started. And so, I mean, there has to be some logical reason to have these setback rules. And if they're trying to kill the economic development side of it, I guess that's the way to do it. And I just want to make one comment, Harvey, that you mentioned about all these the things going on. The Southwest Power Pool down in Texas and the southern parts of the country, they just announced that wind is their largest fuel supplier for their power grid. And the reason that is because the economics of this stuff has gone off the charts low. It's the lowest cost energy by far of anything on the planet. And that's why the rest of the world is going for it. And so if Ohio wants their rates to have a life where they're not continually going up, they need to really develop these renewable resources, because there is no fuel, there's no emissions, there's no waste, it requires no water, and it requires very little transmission because the power is very close to the load. So, you know, it's an economic issue for Ohio to really get their arms around how they can open up the doors for the renewable energy.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. That's fantastic, and that makes the case. So why is this tied into HB6? So HB6, and I've already gotten pushback on this, this is a very great group of people. HB6 may or may not get rescinded. We're hoping it gets rescinded, but the way and the bailout will be rescinded, and that's what we're all working for. But simultaneously, we can end not only nuclear power, but also oil, coal, and gas for electricity in Ohio by rescinding this one sentence in the Ohio Code. And I see absolutely no reason why our campaign to rescind HB6 should not include a simultaneous campaign to rescind the setback clause in the Ohio Code. Because what's really going to bury fossil fuels and nuclear power in Ohio is wind development. The Northern Ohio is unique because it not only has, as Dan knows, commercially viable and favorable wind energy, but it also has transmission lines. The biggest barrier to new wind in most of the country is transmission and proximity to the cities that consume the power. You know, in Northern Ohio, we have a tremendous grid already there, and the windmills will be close to Toledo, Akron, Cleveland, Ashtabula, Buffalo, Erie, around to Detroit. I mean, it's absolutely ideal for wind power. So my proposal and my purpose in this is to make it clear that we're not just talking about abstract, oh, let's do wind power. This is territory that has already been investigated. It is absolutely ideal commercial territory for new wind power, and it would happen in 2-3 years that there will be more capacity installed in wind power in Northern Ohio than there would be nuclear. And then we could also chop really deep into all the fossil fuels if we get rid of this one sentence in the Ohio Code. And my feeling is that this is the time to do it. So, David, you've got a hand. Go ahead.
Thank you, Harvey. But you see my name on the screen is Harvey Wasserman. Do you see that?
Yeah, but you're a lot better looking than Harvey Wasserman.
Let me play semi-devil's advocate here. You know, I don't know everybody here real well, but I totally agree with everything you're saying. In fact, you know, our summer house is right on Lake Erie in Madison, Ohio. So I know those winds pretty well. I sail in them. But here's the issue. It's not an issue of needing that setback eliminated. The issue is we're trying to get HB6 repealed. And HB6 is based on a total corrupt enterprise. All right, so it's a lot. We have a little more leverage going after legislators and the new speaker and people like that, by saying, you know, that was so corrupt. I mean, even DeWine and the new speaker are saying it should be repealed. What we're worried about is they'll repeal it and then they'll put another bill in to give funding to First Energy again. So it's possible that you would complicate the situation, the issue, with the setback issue. So you have to think through, how does that fit in? Because the setback, was it part of the corrupt enterprise of Larry Householder? You know, was the money, the dark money, used to get the setback changed? We have to be careful here.
Yes, but the question then is, what possible reason could the Ohio legislature have had to do this? There is absolutely no logical, rational, economic, ecological, health, or safety reason for this setback clause. So what we need to do, I think, is join the issue. Because if we win the set, even if they bankrolled, God forbid, the two nuclear plants, if the wind comes in there, everything changes. It's a bigger deal in some ways than the bailout. So, you know, I see if we do not bring up the setback clause in this fight against HB6, we will miss a huge opportunity. They cannot, in the middle of all this bribery.
The question is how to do it.
Just bring it up, just demand it, just get a legislator to introduce with the rescind a separate piece of legislation to rescind the setback clause. It would be a tremendous missed opportunity if we don't do this.
Did you just say a separate piece of legislation?
Well, one or the other. I don't, you know, it does both. Do both. Stick it with the rescind HB6 and do a separate piece of legislation. You're talking about $4 billion worth of economic development here.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I think we need to get legislators who advise us, including Kent Smith, how to go about this to make sure it doesn't go wrong.
Well, I think we go wrong if we don't bring it up now. It has to be brought up now because
the question is how.
Well, yes, I think any way we can, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
I'm wondering who is behind the setback, because that was, was it the fossil fuel industries?
Well, it was Bill Seitz who did it. It's 6 years ago. So, you know, but the implication would be, if these guys hang on to this setback clause, the clear implication would be that somebody's paying them to do it. Why else would they do it?
And Bill Seitz is in the leadership here and involved in the repeal of HB6. They mentioned that last night. Trent mentioned that last night.
Good. So get him to repeal. You know, they're going to come at us and they're going to say, if you shut down the nuclear plants, where are you going to get the energy? And we should say, repeal the setback clause and we'll get it from wind.
Well, we've seen over the... Harvey, what we've seen over the years in all of the places where obstructions has come up, the Koch brothers have been the money behind the legislators who do these things.
Yeah, and I saw a piece linking that setback clause to ALEC, to the American Legislative, whatever it is. So yeah,
you got Murray Energy in Ohio very involved in that.
Yeah. So, you know, Dave, you could have a windmill on your property in Madison there. You can make a ton of money.
I'm just concerned. This is not that simple, Harvey. This has to be done carefully so you have success with both goals.
Yes, I would not disagree. But we've got to introduce, I believe, being here in Columbus, that we have to introduce right now the setback clause into this equation. It cannot possibly hurt us. On the maybe I'm wrong. Does anybody see a way that introducing the setback clause now hurts us in repealing the HB6? Why would it hurt us?
I think David's suggestion of contacting Representative Kent Smith and asking him, because he's really on our side and he really knows the State House and he really knows the issues, and he would have the best intel on that. But I think, you know, the fact that we could just mention this, you know, along with HB6, we could at least ask, you know, well, somewhere along the line in our public statements, this is, well, what about this, you know, how corrupt is this wind setback clause as well? But it's an opportunity, at minimum, it's an opportunity for us to bring up the issue. But I would suggest, as David said, speaking with Representative Kent Smith and getting his opinion.
Harvey?
Yes.
I don't mean to monopolize really, but this is so important for what you're talking about for the wind industry in Ohio, but also to get rid of these dangerous Perry and David Spessey plants. The thing is, I think we should be focused, and I'm glad to hear everybody's opinion on this, on repealing HB 6. That should be the effort right now. And then once it's repealed, they're going to replace it. So the question then is, can we get the setback changed in the replacement legislation or a separate piece of legislation? That's the two things. I would never mix up the setback with repealing HB 6 right now.
Well, but when they're going to come at us and they're going to say, if we repeal HB 6, how are we going to replace the energy from Perry and David Spessey?
Who's going to come at us?
The First Energy, the people.
But First Energy is going to push for legislation to keep those plants open and get the $1 billion in the legislation.
Exactly. And what we want to say is, instead of using ratepayer money to subsidize your nuclear plants, let's get four times the energy, way cheaper, with no public money, because it's all private investment from wind power.
Exactly, but that's after we get them to repeal HB6.
Why is it after? That's the point. Why would you?
Because you give the opposition, like Seitz and all those people, to say, see, all these people want to get rid of HB6 so that they can get wind power and close all the nuke plants. That's all they want.
You'll have more leverage, Harvey. You'll have more leverage by doing what Dave says. You'll have more leverage in the legislation to change the setback rules. Once the other one's repealed, they're going to want to do something.
Yeah.
And so it gives you more leverage to get in there and negotiate the clean energy side of it and say, okay, so if we're not going to subsidize these nukes, well, where are we going to get our energy in the long run? And then you throw this into the mix. But I think Dave's right.
Well, hey, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that Connie had raised her hand. Connie, I've given you the ability to say something. Connie, you want to say something?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to say, can you hear me?
Yes, yeah, perfectly.
Okay. I just wanted to say that I'm not sure that I tend to agree more with Harvey than with Dave. Sorry, Dave. Because I'm not sure that we have either at this point the clout or the time to or the luxury of making these two completely separate issues. They're to me, they're integrally entwined, and I say we go for broke with this. I have no problem with attempting to insert at the same time as repealing, letting it be known that this wind setback is absolutely ridiculous and has been ridiculous and probably was the product of corruption.
I mean, last night, the representative said, they got enough votes in the Senate right now, 17, to repeal HB 6.
I know, and so I'm saying that.
So the problem is in the House. They don't have the votes in the House. So we have to do a full court press on pushing the leadership in the House to get rid of HB 6. That's what we got to focus on. And then we work like crazy, whatever comes after that, to make the setback part of it. If you push for the setback part of the repeal, it doesn't make any sense, first of all. You're repealing legislation. You're not adding words to legislation.
But what if they repeal and replace simultaneously?
Well, that's what we got to watch, and that's why we have to work with our allies like Kent Smith. You have to be strategic.
Once they repeal HB6, they're going to turn around, and in 2 nanoseconds, they're going to restore the bailout. And they'll strip out one thing. They might give us back the energy efficiency. It's not going to take them any time at all to vote in another bailout bill.
That's not true, because they may not have the votes in the Senate to pass it.
But we don't know.
Huh?
We don't know.
Well, we know they have enough to repeal HB6. So it's likely that they don't have enough to put that bailout back in. Anyway, I don't want to, you know.
No, I understand. So I want to put this front and center, because, you know, I went up there. All those farmers are ready to go. And it is money in the bank for these people.
No question.
Saving their farms. As you know, you know that area better than anybody.
Stuart's been having his hand up forever.
Okay, Stuart.
You need more than the Senate to repeal something, don't you? You also need the House and the governor to repeal things.
Yeah.
Isn't that the case? So I think first is to get all the corrupt representatives that are members of Team Householder to get it defeated in the coming election.
He's
worried about it.
Wait.
But they're going to move on this before the election.
Absolutely.
They're going to vote. I mean, the repeal could come soon. I just, to me, and I understand what you're all saying, to me, I would put in, when they repeal HB6, to try and repeal the wind setback, at least get it into the dialogue. And what Dan has made clear is that, you know, we're not talking about some kind of abstract hippie farm up here. This is hardcore stuff, big money, very profitable, and you know, save our farms as well as our economy. Dan, what do you estimate the cost per kilowatt hour that would come out of these machines in northern Ohio?
If the resource is about 6 meters per second with the turbines we put in today, you're probably looking at a cost of under 4 cents.
I mean, that's really, really cheap. What's the cost per kilowatt hour from the nukes? Kevin, do you know by chance? No? Okay.
What's your retail rate?
I don't know. What do we pay for electricity in this state? Anybody know? Tim?
Well, in Madison, in northeastern Ohio, we're in NOPEC, and it's 4 cents a kilowatt.
So the cost from the wind power is 4 cents. Okay.
Your retail rate?
That's for the generation.
All right. So, okay. So I've raised the issue. If we were voting, if this was an organization, I would want to go full board to simultaneously repeal the setback clause with the just to raise with the HV6 just to raise the issue.
Harvey, I put up a poll asking that exact question, and if everyone could go ahead, we'll start to see the results in real time.
Okay,
so once everybody has voted, it'll end.
Trina, I sent you beforehand, I emailed you the link to an article on with the specifics of the setback clause. If you can look in your email.
Is that the one from Wind Action?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if, I don't know if anybody else here was on that call last night with Kent Smith, representative, but it was so good. And the one thing it impressed me was, no matter what we think we should do, you got to know how they work in that craziness in Columbus, how they work behind the scenes. And he knows how that works. And I think before we do anything, we should be talking to him about what's the best way to do this. Because he knows whether it's going to be, you know, workable or not, what you're suggesting.
Okay.
I agree.
Let's do it. Tim? Tim, you're muted.
Yeah.
being a little pragmatic on this, as to sort of think this out, it was a rider on a budget bill that put in that setback clause, right?
Yes.
So, Harvey, I think you're sort of on to something. We just need to logistically think it out. is that apparently it appears like the bill's going to be repealed. Some way or another, it's going to be repealed. I mean, it's going to happen because of the corruption and all that. I mean, it's so exposed, and everybody's exposed now. So, they're running a little bit afraid on that. But, I'm sure the wind industry has their lobbyists also. Is we need to get the lobbyists in there to get some senator or somebody in the House to slip in a rider repealing the setback clause. It's that simple. I can see the simplicity of it. It doesn't have to be a bill. It just has to be a rider, just like what they threw on to put in that setback clause. And maybe we should try to give that some thought and appeal to the industry that have left the state and see if we can get them to motivate their get their lobbyists to start trying to get a rider like that, like what was used to set it back. That's what all I got to say.
Harvey, I found the email that you were referring to. Do you want me to put it up on screen and you can share it?
No, just put it in chat. Just put it in the chat.
It doesn't all fit.
All right, then put the link in the chat.
You got it.
Okay, that's a great idea. I like that. When's the next budget bill?
That's why
it doesn't have to be on the budget bill. It should be on the repeal bill. See, because really their argument has been all along is what are we going to do without the energy for the nuclear plants? Well, how long does it take for these plants to come up? I mean, you can get
Dan, well, that's his question for Dan.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a year, maybe.
If the floodgates opened in northern Ohio and the setback clause was rescinded, how long would it take us to build $4 billion worth of windmills in northern Ohio?
Well, the normal development time for our wind project is probably 2 to 2.5 years.
Yeah, that's nothing.
From start.
Yep.
Start to finish.
Once the green light is there, we could have $4 billion worth of wind turbines up and running in northern Ohio in 2.5 years.
No, that's for a wind project.
Okay.
You're not going to get them all permitted and done at the same time. In southwest Minnesota, where we put in, like, we have about $4 billion worth of operating turbines, it's taken 10 years to do that.
Okay. But we could. How long before the first one comes online?
A couple of years. Well, it depends on a lot of different things on how amenable the utility is to the power contracts. How is the PJM into the interconnection queue? I mean, are they going to study it to death? How long does it take to get your permits, local, state, and federal permits? There's a lot of process involved in developing a wind project. You don't snap your fingers and start digging in the ground. It takes a lot of process. And like I say, the normal cycle time from start to finish is usually right around 2.5 to 3 years for a large wind project.
Okay, that's reasonable. Okay, that's, I just wanted to make the point. We got some good ideas. Does anybody else want to jump in and say anything?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Nuclear people have this thing about saying jobs. It's going to kill jobs if they don't have the nuclear bailout. So how can you counter that?
Dan, how many jobs are created when you build a wind farm?
Hundreds and hundreds. I mean, the reason a lot of our development in Minnesota took off like it did is we framed all this as economic development. I mean, the construction jobs are phenomenal. The lawyers, the bankers, the engineers, all of the people involved in the construction phases of the project, all the people involved in the operations and maintenance. We have 3 or 4 technical schools that all they do is spit out technicians to go work on the turbines and keep them running. I mean, that's the key to the whole thing is that the legislators when we passed our legislation in Minnesota that really took up, made our wind take off, it was all framed around economic development and community development. And we did it with a Republican governor and a Republican House and a Democratic Senate, and they all were on board.
I got to mention,
just one thing, because Tim Chavez made a good point. That's a good example of how you have to be careful. If you attach a rider to the repeal legislation of HB 6, it could cause that repeal to lose, because there may be House members who would vote for the repeal because of the corruption and DeWine's for it and Cupp's for it, but they won't vote for it without rider, for example. So the rider, if there's a rider for the setback, which I totally agree with, probably should be on the new bill that's replacing HB 6 that all the, you know, pro-nuke people want and the conservatives want and sites and everybody wants, but there can be the rider there for the wind setback where all these points can be made, just like Dan just made. You can get more jobs out of this wind than you do out of these nuke plants.
Okay. I want to point out, by the way, in Minnesota, the first $400 million of wind development came in a nuclear fight. They wanted to store nuclear waste at Prairie Island. Right. We wanted them to shut Prairie Island.
Right.
And they finally made a deal to keep the nuclear waste at Prairie Island, and the goddamn things were still operating. But they set aside $400 million for the wind business. So there is a history.
They set aside 400 megawatts, Harvey, so it was about $800 million worth of stuff.
Oh, yeah, 400 megawatts.
Can somebody here agree to be the contact with legislators to figure out how this should be approached?
How about you? You know these guys.
I haven't been dealing with them for quite a while. What about Pat, you, or somebody, Neil Wagoner, or who? I don't know who would be.
I mean, well, Bob and I will write about it at the Free Press.
Right.
But and Bob, you know one legislator, right? Don't you know somebody in the legislature?
Well, I'll be glad to call Kent Smith.
All right. Well, please do.
Okay.
And give him the contacts. Where's his district?
Is he Lakewood?
Oh, so he's up there.
Yeah.
So his area will stand to gain from the development, right?
Yes, and he's very pro wind. I mean, he's good.
All right. If you have a conversation with him and get back to us, that'd be great.
So this is Pat, and I'll kind of see what I can do about getting in contact with him. So I was on his webinar a couple of days ago. Yeah, it was excellent. And I want to mention the point that he brought up, where the pressure points should be to repeal this. And one, and the main pressure point, he said, should be on the governor, that the governor needs to really get behind it. And then another one was Larry Obhoff, the Senate president. And then the third one was the new speaker, Cupp. And then maybe David, you can fill me in, because I wasn't taking notes at the time. And they talked about that the speaker has like an inner circle of five people, something like that. And they haven't been determined yet. Right.
That's the leadership.
That's the leadership circle? Or?
Right. That's what that is. And they haven't picked the people yet.
So.
Seitz is one of them.
He mentioned two people that were in that circle that Cupp should not keep, not put in the circle, because the circle hasn't been closed yet. And one was Seitz. And who was the other one?
Can't remember.
So when you find out, but the pressure could be on Cupp right now to not put Seitz within this leadership circle.
Well,
he's the worst there is.
Yeah. Seitz was responsible for the setback clause, as far as I can tell.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
So then the question is, who bribed him? What did he get?
Take a look into Akron area.
Someone wanted to say something?
Harvey, it's Connie. Could I just ask Dan a question?
Please.
Do you have wind developer contacts that were in Ohio? Do you have contacts here?
Well, our contacts in Ohio was Honda. Honda contacted us and wanted to produce clean energy. There are some folks out there, I believe, that do stuff.
The other thing is, would you be willing to testify at a hearing if they even make it that transparent?
I'd have to play that by ear, given all this COVID travel stuff. It's a little
The other thing that we're trying to do, or at least Sierra Club was pushing for, and Pat can verify this, and this happened to have been for a different god-awful Ohio bill, that House Bill 104, but we were pushing to have everything done remotely, for that particular bill. That one seems to be on pause for the moment, but that's what we would push for sure.
Dan, you'd be all right to testify by Zoom.
Oh yeah, I have no problem with that.
Okay, good, thank you. You're just a wealth of information.
Yeah, nobody knows when this is better than Dan.
Yeah.
Okay, so anybody else? I mean, we're at the end of the hour. I hope it was productive. I think we got some insights, but I did propose this to a couple of other groups, and the response ran the gamut. Some people are concerned that will interfere with the repeal of HB 6, and other people are all gung ho.
If I could remind everybody to, because not everybody has voted in our poll, you'll see the poll button down in your window there. Click it and make a choice. We're only at 60% of our crowd has voted.
Okay, now also just as we depart, on Monday at 5, I'm running a convening with a national chat Zoom on voter rights. And Bob is going to lead off with the incredible tale of what's going on in Ohio. I mean, it's truly staggering what's happening with voting in Ohio. And if you're interested at all, email me and I'll send you the link to the Zoom for Monday's call. But it is truly, you couldn't make this stuff up, right, Bob?
No, I think we made it up in a few books already.
Yeah. I mean, it's astounding what's happening with voting in Ohio. All right, well, we're at the top of the hour. Does anybody else have anything they want to add?
Steve, push the numbers on the chat for First Energy employees. That's not just Ohio. I assume people know that.
Okay, yeah.
And Pat
Chavez, you had your hand
Pat,
up.
I'll try to communicate with you tomorrow. We'll talk about how to go.
Okay, and my understanding is that the bailout in Pennsylvania is hung up and that this scandal in Ohio has really had an impact.
Well, actually, not really, frankly. We've been able to block it for a couple of years, and it wasn't going anywhere before the scandal hit in Ohio. It wasn't coming out of committee or anything.
All right.
But of course, it certainly didn't help it.
I'm sure you all know that pretty much the same thing is happening in Illinois, except that the Speaker of the House there is a Democrat. So we're bipartisan. All right, you guys, thank you very much. Thank you, Train. Thank you, Dan, for coming in from Minnesota. And we'll see how this goes. I have no plans to do this again next week, and I don't plan to unless something really amazing comes up. Anybody else want to convene this again, let me know, and we'll work it with Train. But
just so you know, the link will be live. You can use it. So if something crazy happens, you can always check back on the link.
Okay.
So far, 62% chose yes, combine efforts, with 38% saying no, keep the efforts separate.
And who voted for Trump? Did anybody vote for Trump?
You all voted right, third guys. Party. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
That's me.
Good night.
Thanks, everybody.